Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Joy 94.9. Freshly dug Joycast.
Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
Well, good morning. You're listening to Freshly Dug with me, Doug Pollard. I just had to run out and grab a glass of water for one of my guests this morning who's just arrived. We've got Paul Morgan in the studio, the Deputy Director of SANE. And on the line, Anne Mitchell from Gay and Lesbian Health of Victoria. Morning, Anne.
Good morning, Doug.
Mental Health Week. Now, we seem to have a bit of a problem getting the community to recognise and fund programmes to deal with gay and lesbian health issues. What are those particular issues?
Is that a question to me, Doug?
Yes.
Well, I think the mental health problems for gay and lesbian people are somewhat different from the rest of the community.
Mm-hmm.
We gay and lesbian people, of course, have the same mental health rates of mental illness and so on, and experience the same kind of conditions as the rest of the community to about the same level. But because there's such a continual background of discrimination, rejection, marginalisation, sometimes very active violence, gay and lesbian people experience a lot more depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts and those kind of things because they're dealing with an environment that's so challenging, so uncertain, sometimes so hostile, that there's a great burden of mental illness that can be prevented in our community.
Now, we hear that there aren't good stats on this, which is what Beyond Blue were telling us a little while back. Why is that?
Well, there are and there aren't. We've only just begun the process of getting sexual orientation into the big health surveys that sort of determine the health policies and priorities. And we're winning a bit on that, but in the past there hasn't been any formal data collected with other health conditions that would tell us whether gay and lesbian people are experiencing things any differently from anyone else. But that said, we do now have quite a bit of Australian research that gives very good data on, I think, and probably the best one is the Australian study, the longitudinal study of Australian women. This is 40,000 women. It's a big, big study.
Oh, that is a lot.
It's been going for many years. And a couple of years ago, we got the opportunity, they did ask about sexual orientation in their younger cohort, and we got the opportunity to analyse that data. And we found that when you compared the non-heterosexual women with the heterosexual women, they were 38% rates of depression compared to 19, higher levels of anxiety, that was 17% compared to 7%, and trying to harm or kill themselves in the last 6 months, 12.6% compared to 2.7%. There were huge differences. So that is a really good example of a population-based study done by, you know, not by the gay lobby or anything, that gives us really clear indication of how severe this problem is for our community.
All right. Paul, I'd like to bring you in at this point. Now, SANE is another mental health charity, in the same way, I suppose, that Beyond Blue is a mental health charity, but you're rather different, aren't you?
We are very different, Doug. Beyond Blue is a national organisation that was established by the Commonwealth and state governments. It's funded to do research, to promote the acceptance of depression in the community more widely,
mm-hmm.
and it's funded to do that by government. SANE Australia is an independent charity. We don't rely on government for any funds. We're always scrabbling around for grants and donations.
Yeah, and as a community radio station,
you
know how
exactly
that works.
What I'm talking about there.
Yes.
And we think it's worth it, though, as a price for independence. And even though we do get occasional government grants, we do think it's very important to maintain that independent stance, and one of the main things we do is to run a free helpline all around Australia, which is not staffed by volunteers. It's actually staffed by health professionals,
right,
whom we pay. So it means that anyone, whether you're in, you know, Whoop Whoop or Carlton, you can just pick up a phone and it's a free call, and you're instantly talking to a health professional who knows exactly what you're talking about.
Right. Now, so if Beyond Blue concentrates on research and public advocacy, I suppose we could call it for short, you're more on the practical end of things then?
Yes, very much. A lot of people who call our helpline, perhaps 25-30% of those people, they're clearly in need of some kind of assessment. They're deeply distressed, they're experiencing symptoms, they may even be experiencing hearing voices or paranoia or almost suicidal thoughts, but they've never seen a doctor. Right. And they've never talked to anyone about it.
And what kind of levels do you get, would you say, from the gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender, intersex, full alphabet soup community kind of thing? Do you get a lot of calls from our community?
As far as we know, no. As I was coming in this morning, I asked our helpline manager about this very issue, and she said as far as people talk about and raise as an issue on the helpline, it may be then they're not talking about it, of course. Mm. It may be a background issue as one of a number of things in their lives, but it's not a primary reason why people would call the SEN helpline, but it is an issue.
Right.
And I think this reflects again what Anne was talking about, the higher levels of anxiety disorders and depression amongst the gay and lesbian community. And as far as what research there is, roughly indicates that levels are at least double.
Yeah. Anne, to bring you back in at this point, I think Paul raised an interesting issue there, that gay and lesbian orientation may be part of the problem for some people, but it's very difficult to identify who is and who isn't, which is one reason why the stats are sometimes not as trusted as they might be.
Yeah, I suspect that a lot of gay and lesbian people are using the SANE service, which has an excellent reputation as far as I can tell, but that probably because they're so practiced in hiding that fact, that wouldn't be something that comes up front. But it might be very relevant to their care or the advice or the referral that they're given. So we're probably seeing there the same phenomena that we see in all service access, that there's a group of people that won't access any services because they believe they'll be homophobic, and then a group that will access services but be really careful not to disclose any information about their sexuality. And it may not be relevant, but of course it probably, for holistic healthcare, it is very relevant. So it might be something that needs to be more actively promoted, that this service is welcoming. We've had tremendous success just with a waiting room poster advertising that fact for health services, just so that gay and lesbian people can suss it out a bit and think, oh yeah, okay, I can trust this service, they're saying it's okay, I'll give it a go.
Yeah, in a way, Paul, that's probably saying, you know, rather than them having to come out to you, and you in a sense have got to come out to them and say, we're welcoming to gay and lesbian people who want to access our services, specifically, I mean.
That's one reason I'm here today.
Yeah.
That's good, Paul.
I think the other thing that's come out of what Anne was saying was we have to be so careful with statistics. Mm. And there are general ones like, say, 14% of the population, about one in six of us in a 12-month period will experience some form of anxiety disorder. These are very serious conditions. They'll sometimes get dismissed as the worried well, or people who just, you know, they should pull themselves together a bit and, you know, just go for a walk or something. But when you think about it, it covers the whole spectrum of obsessive-compulsive disorders, people who have general anxiety, people who have phobias, who can't go out of the house, people who can't go into crowded rooms, people with OCD, perhaps, who might spend, you know, 2 or 3 hours brushing their teeth until they're bleeding at night. These are serious conditions that they really stuff up people's lives. And when we say 14% of the population, that's a really smoothed out number. And like any other statistic, it's actually a lot of highs and lows. There are some groups in society who are genetically more vulnerable. We don't know which members of our society, but probably a large proportion of our society, you know, perhaps 40%, perhaps, who knows, who are vulnerable to disorders like this. And it's when there are particular stresses put on them in life, that's where you see the peaks. Mm-hmm. So it's a much more up and down landscape rather than a smooth plane.
Yeah, I just got an SMS in here. SANE are really, really helpful. I've used them, but I don't tell them about my sexuality because of homophobia. That's presumably because he's afraid of homophobic reaction. So you're here to tell him he doesn't need to worry about that.
Absolutely. Give them a call now. 1-800-18-SANE.
1-800-18-SANE. for a sane and sensible, by the sounds of it, counselling service online. You're listening to Freshly Dug on Joy 94.9. I'm Doug Pollard, talking to Anne Mitchell of Gay and Lesbian Health Victoria and Paul Morgan, the Deputy Director of SANE.
Joy 94.9. Freshly Dug Joycast.
Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
And this is Doug Pollard bringing it to you. It's Mental Health Week this week, so for the first part of the show at least, we're talking about mental health issues, specifically about how they affect our community. And helping me out on the line, we have Anne Mitchell, Director of Gay and Lesbian Health Victoria, and here in the studio, Paul Morgan, the Deputy Director of the mental health body, SANE. Now, Anne,
yes.
Coming back to what we talked about earlier, how difficult is it to get funding for and get people to pay attention to dealing with specifically gay and lesbian mental health problems?
Quite difficult, because I suppose the responses we want to see and the ones that we think will make a difference are the ones that address homophobia. So we're not looking at putting services into people with mental health problems. What we would like to do there is make the services that are there more GLBTI friendly, and that's obviously an important contribution to the mental health of the community. But the services we want are the preventative services, like the support groups for young people, programs in schools that address homophobia, better reporting systems to the GLOWs in the police force around the violence that members of our community feel experience, so, you know, less homophobia in the police force, those kind of things. So it can be quite hard to make that connection to mental health, even with the data we have got. It's a stretch for a lot of people. So we're really arguing for a kind of different approach than maybe for other groups in the community.
So basically what it does is cross over into the political arena.
Well, yeah, it crosses into the political arena. You're not wrong about it. It also, I suppose, asks people to take a bit of a leap that addressing homophobia will lessen this burden of disease. We haven't got much in the way of connective data we have. Lynn Hillier has generated some data that shows the levels of abuse that lead directly to rates of suicide, but we probably need more of that data to make the case. So really, you know, it's hard to argue from a very strong evidence base that we want to do these kind of preliminary activities around lessening homophobia, and that will save money for the government and this will be a great outcome for the community. But that is absolutely what we believe to be the case.
Right. So what you're talking about in a way also is what I would call mainstreaming. That is to say, rather than having specific programs set up to address our community, what you want to do is see changes in the general provision to the community, which is pretty poor anyway, as far as I understand, as far as mental health is concerned.
Yeah, we did do a community consultation around these issues, I think last year, and a lot of people that were in the mental health system said that they had quite a struggle either getting confidence to talk about their sexual orientation or their gender issues, but when they did, they also experienced a lot of negativity and inappropriate treatment. So certainly the services that are there aren't perfect. I'm not saying that's the case for all services. There probably are some good ones. So we probably would like to see one service that had this specialist expertise that could act as secondary consultation to other services, but our goal would be to get the mainstream services up to speed so that wherever you need to access them, they're good.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to bring up with you before I let you go, because I know you've got a busy day ahead of you. We've talked a lot in recent months about gay and lesbian youth, youth suicide, gay and lesbian youth out in the rural areas, but we do seem to have put elderly gay and lesbians more on the back burner. There's an issue there too, isn't there?
Yes, there is. We've got a group called Val's Cafe that's been meeting regularly to talk about some of the issues for older GLBT people and the kind of service provision that is a bit insensitive, keeps them to be invisible and so on. And we are very concerned about older people accessing aged care services in particular and maybe needing to go back into the closet to sort of lose that security and comfort they had in finding a place where they can be themselves and maybe having that all unpicked. So it's certainly on our agenda and we think it's a very important issue. Both ends of the lifespan are where we see on graphs the issues are most prominent.
Right. Well, I'm going to let you go now, Anne, because I want to talk to Paul a bit more in more general terms about like things like how do you know that you've got a mental problem and so on and so forth. But thank you very much for your time this morning and keep up the good work.
Okay. Thank you, Doug, and thank you to Paul for the good work you do.
Thanks, Anne.
That was Anne Mitchell there, the Director of Gay and Lesbian Health Victoria. Now, we're going to try and roust out Dr. Jonathan Anderson, who's a GP working in Gay and Lesbian Health. He's been on this programme before. He's in his surgery this morning, so he may not have time to talk to us, but I thought it would be good if he could just spare 5 minutes to talk about the presentation of people with mental problems, because he says that they take up about a third of his time. Paul, that to me sounds very strange, but you say that's pretty normal.
I think that would surprise a lot of people. I think one of the parts of having a mental health problem, whether it's depression or anxiety or whether it's another condition like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, you can't diagnose these yourself. You can't look in the mirror and say, oh, I reckon I've got bipolar disorder. It's as absurd as trying to diagnose yourself with a physical health problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that really needs a medical expert, a doctor to diagnose. So if anyone's concerned about how they're feeling or how someone close to them is feeling, it does no harm at all. One thing you can be sure that there's no harm at all in doing is going and talking to a doctor about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's absolutely right. Doctors spend at least 20% of their time talking to people about mental health problems. And that's often a surprise to people. They walk in and they'll talk about the spot on their foot and maybe they've had a bit of eczema. And as they're going out the door, they'll say, oh, and by the way, I've just been feeling so grim lately and it's hard to get out of bed and I can't get any interest in life. And the doctor will say, well, sit down, because the chances are they've talked to about three or four other people in the past day or so about exactly the same thing. Because mental health problems are common and they are treatable.
Yeah. How do you know, though, that you need to talk to a doctor? I mean, how do you know that you may need help on these mental things?
Well, I think that brings up the question that's sometimes raised of, you know, everyone gets a bit down sometimes, which is absolutely true. Everyone gets a bit worried sometimes, which is absolutely true. And that's often for very good reasons. That's perfectly normal. But the difference is that if you feel persistently worried or persistently depressed, and there isn't really a reason for it, it's only a small reason that's really blown out of all proportion, and you might spend hours or weeks or months chewing over something, not being able to get to sleep at night because you're worrying about maybe something someone said at work that they've forgotten long ago, that was just a trivial remark, but you just can't let things go and it just worries at you, and it affects the normal functioning of your life. And I think that's the key thing. When someone starts to interfere with just getting on with leading your everyday life, then that's the time to go and get some help.
Right. Now, obviously, the other very important point is your friends, because, as you said, it's really hard to decide for yourself that you've got a mental problem. But your friends are probably, and your family are probably going to be the people who notice more than you yourself. How do people kind of broach this topic with someone? Because it's really, really delicate to come up to say to someone and say, I think you might have a mental problem.
Yes, that's a real conversation starter, isn't it? I think we're all sensitive about these things, and it's very natural for people to get defensive about how they are and just go, oh, I'm fine, don't worry about it, I'm fine, I don't want to talk about it. Because it's a very close, personal, intimate thing. It's about who you are. It's not something that's like a rash on your hand. It's how you feel deeply within yourself, just like your sexuality. So,
okay, so suppose a friend of mine, for example, seems to be more withdrawn than they used to be. They're not interested in coming out on the town particularly anymore. When I speak to them on the phone, their conversations get really short. Now, I mean, it could just be that our friendship is sort of running into trouble, but it could also be that they're having some kind of mental difficulty. How would you kind of handle that sort of thing?
I think the most important thing is choosing the time and place where you say it. Certainly on the phone, it's easy to sort of knock people off. I think it's very much a matter of choosing a time and a place when people are more relaxed about talking about things. And often, strangely or not, it's for some reason going walking it's easier to talk to people because you're not looking them in the eye. You're walking along and you can sort of raise things as you're sort of strolling around the park or on the beach or whatever. And you can just not talk about it in medical terms, but just, to talk about a change as well.
Yeah.
Not to say that you've been a bit...
But to say you're not being yourself lately, you know.
That's right, it's not that you're not saying much and feeling and looking glum, because maybe that's how the person is all the time. But it's to say that
I've got friends like that.
That's right. And some of us, you know, not everyone can be cheerful Charlie. You know, you've usually been quite a chatty person or quite happy in yourself, but I've noticed recently, you know, it's you look as though you've got something on your mind, or you're worrying about something all the time. You know, do you want to talk about it? And we actually, because this is such an important decision point, as it were, in getting people help, we've actually developed a pamphlet that's exactly about how to raise this conversation and to talk to people. And if anyone calls our helpline, we can send them a free copy.
Yeah, let's give them the helpline number again while we're on. That's 1-800-18-SANE, S-A-N-E. And you've also got a website as well.
www.sane.org.
So, from the Deputy Director's own mouth here on this show, they are not the least bit homophobic. You're quite welcome to raise gay and lesbian issues with them. They're all very well-trained people. You're not talking to volunteers, you're talking to trained individuals when you call that helpline. That's right, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Now there's another issue here that I think... Someone said to me the other day, why was I banging on about lack of mental health services to the gay and lesbian community? Why wasn't I talking about things like the excessive use of drugs and alcohol within the gay and lesbian community? Because surely that was contributing to the problem. How far do you think people use those, you know, recreational drugs, including alcohol, which I include as a recreational drug, as a kind of self-medication in these circumstances?
Look, I think you're absolutely right there, and alcohol is certainly the most, despite all the sensational stories about other drugs, alcohol is without doubt the most commonly used and the most damaging drug that's abused in this country.
Yeah, you can't have a good night out unless you get thoroughly plastered in this country, can you? In theory.
And some.
And some.
And
gosh, it was a big night last night. I don't remember any of it.
That's right. I must have had a good time.
Yes.
Because my brain has been damaged so much, I don't remember it.
Yeah, well, I have to confess, I've had nights like that, but not in recent years. Okay.
But I think, yes, you're right about the so-called self-medication, that particularly with, again, people with what are called the high prevalence disorders, common conditions like depression and anxiety disorders, a very natural... but ultimately...
self-defeating, isn't it?
Self-defeating thing, exactly, is to drink.
Because alcohol is in itself a depressant.
Exactly.
Which just makes things worse. I'm Doug Pollard, bringing it to you on this Mental Health Week. And we've been talking about mental health at the moment with Paul Morgan, the Deputy Director of SANE. Now, we've talked a good deal about, you know, how do you spot... that you might have a problem? How do you spot that your friend might have a problem? We've talked a little bit about self-medication, but what we haven't talked about yet are the kind of treatments that are nowadays available, because it's quite different to how it used to be, I believe.
I think there's still quite a bit of misunderstanding, Doug, in the community about what the treatments for mental illness are. I think that's... There's still a lot of the old nurse ratchet perception of what's going to happen to you if you confess to that terrible thing of having a mental health problem that so many of us have, in fact, do experience. And these days, I have to say that for all its faults, Australia is one of the better places in the world to get treatments for mental health problems.
That surprises me, because we keep hearing a lot of stuff about how there isn't enough available.
Oh, and that's absolutely true. I could honestly say to you, from any health professionals I talk to about mental health services, and if I said, how much money would it take to shut you up and stop complaining, you know, what would fix mental health services, they say double. Double the money. And it would be a brave government that would do that. However, we, particularly with the common conditions like depression and anxiety, when you see a GP, the most effective treatments for many people is psychological therapy, is talking to a psychologist. And in Australia today, for the last, I think it's 2 years now, a GP is able to give a referral to a psychologist, and those sessions are largely covered by Medicare, right, which I think is a very positive step.
A lot of people are worried about the kind of drugs they might get prescribed if they confess, as you put it, to having a mental illness. You often see people saying, I don't like, you know, I didn't like having a mental illness, but I don't like the drugs they give me either.
Look, a lot of us don't even like taking, you know, some headache tablets. And only when a headache's really bad will someone reach for the Nurofen as though it was some dreadful failure of the will or something. But certainly these days with antidepressant medications, they're modern generation of them, they're not addictive and they're not generally dangerous in overdose. So you're not going to, you know, accidentally take too many and have some disastrous consequences. So that these drugs are a lot safer these days. It's a bit hit and miss about which one will actually suit you. So you might need to try one or two. And some of them do have side effects. Some of these side effects do dissipate, you know, within a few days. Others might be more longer lasting. There might be side effects that you don't want, such as trembling or possibly an effect on sexual function or just might not be effective. So the doctor might need to prescribe another one.
So,
that's more
so the basic point is you've got to keep keep your situation monitored.
Yes.
And keep communicating with your GP to make sure that you're getting the right thing at the right time. You know, a friend of mine is a psychiatric nurse, and some of the older drugs were pretty nasty, but I think things have improved enormously, have they not, in recent years?
Oh, they have. And the trouble is that perceptions always take time to catch up with what's actually happening in the world.
Yes, and we still have a bit of a Dickensian view of mental illness, I think, a lot of people.
Well, I think a lot of people still think that there are these big mental institutions, as it were, and they'll get put inside one and not be released without difficulty. But in fact, in Victoria now, there are no big mental institutions anymore.
No. Well, you know, mental health is obviously a major issue. It's a major issue that's not funded sufficiently yet. Certainly gay and lesbian health issues are not probably as fully recognised as they might be. And as we've heard from Anne Mitchell, it's as much to do with the societal situation as anything else. There's a kind of background of, what do we call it? I hate the word homophobia, but there is a general background of non-acceptance or less than ordinary acceptance for gay people, which makes it difficult.
Well, I think the attitudes like homophobia, they're part of a more general intolerance among certain parts of society, and what those things do is just add stress on various groups, and that stress pushes on people and raises anxiety and depression levels.
Okay, well, we're going to have to leave it there because the Deputy Lord Mayor has arrived, and we're going we have to bow to our superiors here.
I'm on my knees.
But it's been fascinating talking to you this morning, Paul. One more time, your helpline number, 1-800-18-SANE, that's S-A-N-E. Don't be afraid to talk about gay and lesbian issues if you do call them and if you do have gay and lesbian issues, because you're talking to fully trained counsellors, you're not talking to volunteers as you might be at other places. You're listening to Freshly Dug on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9. Freshly Dug Joycast. Sponsored by MyMac, the best Apple computer, iPod, and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.